It sounds like the punchline of a joke. Teenagers, it turns out, are a lot more like animals than we might have thought. Well, according to our next guest, it's actually true. Barbara Natterson Horowitz is a professor of medicine at UCLA and co-author of a new book called Wildhood, The Epic Journey from Adolescence to Adulthood in Humans and Other Animals. In the book, she finds that from peer pressure and impulse decisions to clicks and irrational risk-taking, the experience of adolescence is truly universal. I caught up with the author when she was in town recently to talk about her book at ASU's Biodesign Institute.
I'm a physician and an evolutionary biologist, and my work is to turn to nature to find commonalities and differences with human life as a way of better understanding our problems and how we grow up and all kinds of things. So this project looking at adolescence across species was an attempt to see whether there was a way to better understand why human adolescents have so much difficulty with their emotions, they take so many risks, they have trouble sometimes with relationships, just to explore all of that across nature. So probably the most surprising, if I had to say the most surprising of all of the findings of our research, had to do with animal sexuality. So one reality, which I had no idea about, was that in nature, animals don't just go through puberty and then immediately start having sex.
Which I think we would assume, right? Like, you literally call it animalistic, right?
It's exactly. I mean, I had a general sense that, yeah, well, they go through puberty, and they do. But it turns out in birds and mammals and a wide range of animals, they may be biologically capable of having offspring, but that does not mean that they have the opportunity to or the ability to. So they may not know how to do the courtship, the dance or the rituals, or they may be too low on the totem pole on these animal hierarchies to have access to mates. So this can go on for years, and in some species, even decades, where you have basically a physically mature adolescent and then young adult who actually isn't mating at all.
So that's very interesting, because I think often the argument with teenagers, right, is that this is, you know, it's against your nature to have to wait to be a sexual human being, right? But in fact, you're saying it's not that dissimilar from what animals do.
Right. Well, I'm not saying that there's a right or a wrong. I'm just kind of reporting what happens in nature.
Yeah.
But I certainly had never really considered why it might be adaptive. That's a word that we use in evolutionary biology to describe, you know, a behavior or a characteristic that increases the likelihood of an animal doing well, surviving and reproducing. That there might be some adaptive benefit to waiting, and I'm using air quotes with waiting, but it does turn out that animals who have more experience with life are better parents. And even there are some fish parents. You know, we usually think that fish just deposit eggs and then off they go, but about 20% of fish species, they actually parent. They actually they take care of their offspring. And some of them actually keep the little fish fry, the little tiny fish, in their mouths. They're called mouth brooders.
Right.
And, you know, first-time mouth brooders, when they have the fish in their mouth, they haven't figured it out yet. They sometimes swallow their brood. So the point is, sometimes being older, being more experienced, having a little bit more life experience is certainly a better idea from a parenting perspective.
That is fascinating. Okay, so but you're looking at this in a broad sense, right? Like that animals, first of all, experience adolescence, much like humans do. And it's full of all sorts of things that humans also experience. Peer pressure, clicks, risk-taking, you know, all of these kinds of bad judgment moments we have when we're teenagers. This was a common theme?
Right. So when Catherine Bowers and I decided we would spend several years looking toward nature to understand human adolescence, at that point, we didn't even know if adolescence existed in other animals.
Right.
In fact, there was some literature that said, no, adolescence is created by modern human culture. And after 5 years of studying the lives of wild animal adolescents around the world, I would say definitively that's not the case. That, you know, from fish through reptiles and amphibians, birds and other mammals, animals go through puberty. And then there's a period of time when they need to learn really four core skills in order to be a successful mature adult.
List those out for us, and we'll get into it.
Sure. Well, the first is learning to keep yourself safe. And we looked at whether animal adolescents were at increased risk. We know that human adolescents, it's a really dangerous period of life. The mortality for adolescents goes up pretty significantly. You know, there are 1 million to 1.5 million animals who are killed every day in the United States on roads. Mm. It's roadkill. You drive by, and disproportionately, we found that those were adolescent animals.
Wow.
And it seems that inexperience puts you in danger. Of course, the paradox is that gaining experience itself can be very dangerous.
Right. So there's this idea that teenagers, human or non-human, right, are risk-taking. Like, they are more likely to do stupid stuff. But that's also the way that they gain the kind of experience that could make them more successful adults.
Yeah. It's sort of incredible. Sometimes you see these things that, or you read about what some teenagers do, and you think, oh my God, that is so knuckleheaded. It doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense. And as an evolutionary biologist, I'm always interested in trying to understand what doesn't make sense and see if there's a way to do that. And what I do is look across species to see, are there commonalities? And it turns out that risk-taking among adolescent animals is, you see it in birds, you see it in other mammals, potentially even in fish. And there's something called neophilia, which is philia is like something that you love, right? So neo is new. So adolescent animals have more neophilia. They go towards, they're interested in new things, whereas the juveniles are scared and the adults who understand what's going on are also pretty cautious. And so we human beings, adolescents, have more neophilia than adults. And we see that across species. And that may be part of why adolescents take risks. Mm. Now you might say, well, but that doesn't make any sense. I mean, if their mortality is increasing, and this is before they're reproducing, from an evolutionary biologist perspective, that doesn't make sense. But remember that our species is very young. We're a 200 or 300,000-year-old species, mm-hmm. and yet we're walking around with biology that belonged to our animal ancestors. I'm talking about hundreds of millions of years in the making. And so sometimes when we do things that don't make sense, there can be an explanation that's rooted in our common ancestry with animals.
Hmm. So who is this book for, I guess, in that sense? Like, are you hoping that parents or teenagers themselves get something out of this that's, you know, in particular to them?
Right. We wrote it for a broad audience. For sure, we were thinking about two groups. We were thinking, first of all, about parents, and we were also thinking about the growing number of adults who are trying to help kids with anxiety and depression,
yeah.
because rates of anxiety and depression in that 14 to 24-year-old group, it's skyrocketing. I mean, you've got rates of mental illness flat in other age categories, and it's just escalating. And one of the most powerful insights for me from this book was making a connection between the biology of fish who live in schools together and relate to one another, and these are fish that emerged on Earth over 450 million years ago, that there's a connection between their social brains and how they relate to each other and to social media use and why so many adolescents feel bad after they use social media and why it can be so painful to be using social media, why FOMO hurts,
yeah.
these kinds of things. So on the one hand, social media seemed like something that was extremely modern and human, and what relevance could fish biology have? But what we found was a very direct connection between the brains of human beings and the parts of our brains that regulate emotion mm-hmm. and the social brain networks of fish. And when their status rises, their serotonin networks get activated, and when fish have what's called status descent, their brain chemistry changes in ways that makes them behave very differently. And wow. we think there's really a connection there between mood and status. And the biology of social media, it's all about status. It's all about comparison. How many followers? How many likes? And ultimately, most of the time when you're on social media, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
So we think there's a connection and an opportunity to have psychotherapists and counselors and parents and even adolescents themselves begin talking about how they're feeling using this lens of animal behavior.
That is Barbara Natterson-Horowitz. Thank you so much for coming in, Barbara.
My pleasure. Thank you.